ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्री प्रह्लाद उवाच साधु मन्ये सुरा वर्या देहिनां सदा समुद्विग्ना धियं असात् ग्रहात् यद्वात्मा आत्म गृहं अन्तः रूपं वनं गतो यद्धरिं आश्रयेत। श्रीप्रह्लाद उवाच तत्साधु मन्ये सुरवाय देहिनम् सदा समुद्विग्न धियम् असद्ग्रहात् हित्वात्मपाठं गृहमन्दकूपम् वनं गतो यद्धरि आश्रयेत। श्रीप्रह्लाद उवाच तत्सारु मन्ये सुरवर्य देहिनम् सदा समुद्विग्न धियम् असद्ग्रहात् हित्वात्मपाठं गृहमन्दकूपम् वनं गतो यद्धरिमाश्रयेत। श्रीप्रह्लाद उवाच तत्साधु मन्ये सुरवर्य देहिनम् सदा समुद्विग्न धियम् असद्ग्रहात् हित्वात्मपाठं गृहमन्दकूपम् वनं गतो यद्धरिमाश्रयेत। श्रीप्रह्लाद उवाच प्रह्लाद महाराज replied that sadhu very good or the best part of life manye I think asura varya O king of the Asurians Dehinam, of persons who have accepted the material body. Sada, always. Samudvigna, full of anxieties. Dhyam, whose intelligence. Asatgrahat, because of accepting the temporary body. Or bodily relations as real, thinking, I am this body, and everything belonging to this body is mine. Hitva, giving up. Atmapatam, the place where spiritual culture or self-realization is stopped. Griham, the bodily concept of life, or householder life. Antakupam, which is nothing but a blind well, where there is no water, but one nonetheless searches for water. vanam, to the forest, gata, going, yat, which, harim, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, ashtayeta, may take shelter of. Translation. Prahlad Maharaj replied, O best of the Asuras, king of the demons, as far as I have learned from my spiritual master, any person who has accepted a temporary body and temporary household life is certainly embarrassed by anxiety because of having fallen in a dark well where there is no water but only suffering. One should give up this position and go to the forest, vana. More clearly, one should go to Vrindavana, where only Krishna consciousness is prevalent, and should thus take shelter of the Supreme Personality, God. Purport. Hiranyakashipu thought that Prahlad, being nothing but a small boy with no actual experience, might reply with something pleasing but nothing practical. Prahlad Maharaj, however, being an exalted devotee, had acquired all the qualities of education. Yasti bhaktir bhagavati kinchana sarveri gunaistatra samasate sura harav abhaktasya kuto mahatguna manoratena sati bhavato kahi. One who has unflinching devotional faith in Krishna consistently manifests all the good qualities of Krishna and the demigods. However, he who has no devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead has no good qualifications because he is engaged by mental concoction in material existence, which is the external feature of the Lord. Bhagavatam 5.18.12. So-called educated philosophers and scientists who are simply on the mental platform cannot distinguish between what is sat, eternal, and what is asat, temporary. The Vedic injunction is asato ma jyotir dhamma. Everyone should give up the platform of temporary existence and approach the eternal platform. The soul is eternal, and topics concerning the eternal soul are actually knowledge. Elsewhere it is said, apasyatam atmatattvam griheshu grihamehinam. Those who are attached to the bodily concept of life and who thus stick to life as a grihastha or householder on the platform of material sense enjoyment cannot see the welfare of the eternal soul. Prahlad Maharaj confirmed this by saying that if one wants success in life, he should immediately understand from the right sources what is his self-interest is, and how he should mold his life and spiritual consciousness. One should understand himself to be part and parcel of Krishna, and thus completely take shelter of his lotus feet for guaranteed spiritual success. Everyone in the material world is in the bodily conception, struggling hard for existence, life after life. Prahlad Maharaj, therefore, recommended that to stop this material condition of repeated birth and death, one should go to the forest, vana. In the varnashram system, one first becomes a brahmachari, then a grihastha, a vanaprastha, and finally a sannyasi. Going to the forest means accepting vanaprastha life, which is between grihastha life and sannyas. As confirmed in the Vishnu Purana 3.8.9, varnashramacharavata purushena para puman Vishnur ara jyate. By accepting the institution of varna and ashram, one can very easily elevate himself to the platform of worshipping Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, if one remains in the bodily conception, one must rot within this material world, and his life will be a failure. Society must have divisions of Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. And for spiritual advancement, one must gradually develop as a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyasi. Prahlad Maharaj recommended that his father accept vanaprastha life, Because as a grihastha, he was becoming increasingly demoniac due to bodily attachments. Prahlad recommended to his father that accepting vanaprastha life would be better than going deeper and deeper into griham under gupam, the blind well of life as a grihastha. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we therefore invite all the elderly persons of the world to come to Vrindavan and stay there in retired life, making advancement in spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness. So Hiranyakashipu here has asked his son, what is the best thing that you've learned? Right? What have you learned from your teachers? What is the best of this? What's the essence? So here we find that Hiranyakashipu is expecting as a child that naturally he'll come up with something interesting. You know, the prasad's nice, or I like the math, or I like the history, or something like that. So, but he's very surprised when he's actually getting to the essence and giving a practical solution. In that, he's actually giving his father practical advice what he should be doing. So this was not actually expected by Hiranyakashipu, especially this kind of conclusion. And if you come up with, you know, that to get ahead in life is the goal, end all and be all, and by through political methods you can attain all this, then his father would have thought, good student, right? Very nice teachers, good student. But he didn't. He immediately went into the principle of the soul doesn't belong in the material world, but they belong in the spiritual world. So when the soul gets distracted by material life, then that's a waste of time. That's the biggest mistake the soul can make. So he's recommending that one give up this attachment to the bodily concept of life and take up Krishna consciousness. Now, very interesting point is there that in the same point Prabhupada's making, I mean here it's being made, Prabhupada's commenting, they say, give up this bodily attachment. Right? And then he's quoting the verse from Vishnu Purana saying that one can easily envelop, elevate oneself to Krishna consciousness through the Varnashram system. Does that make sense? You see the contradiction here? Seeming contradiction. That Varnashram we're going to take can be taken as bodily concept of life. That I'm Brahman, I'm Kshatriya, I'm Vaishya, I'm Brahmachari, Grihastha, all this. Right? But what is the point that is made is that through it, one can very easily elevate oneself to Krishna consciousness. Right? Because Hiranyakashipu here, he's a grihastha, right? And he's following all the various aspects of it. He's sending his child to Gurukul. He is dealing, it says here, affectionately he's asking, so he's being a very good father. But he's seen as a grihamedi, because he's not using the Varnashram to understand God. Right? Does that make sense? So basically, it's not so much the form of what one is using, it's how it is being used. Right? This is a very important thing that you see when you're dealing with personality, is someone has a nature and then there is the method within that nature. Right? They go together. So, that's Vasya? So this is then his point is that the essence is that you're using your life to be Krishna conscious. Right? Does that make sense? So now these very strong points are being made about grihastha life here, because the nature of grihastha life is such that the most complexities that can take you away from Krishna by distractions are available. you don't have that many distractions in any other of the ashrams. Right? So this means that just like a knife, it can do wonderful things or it can make a lot of trouble. Right? Does that make sense? So, as Prabhupada gives the example, in the knife in the hands of the surgeon saves lives, but the knife in the hand of the criminal destroys lives. So one may say, oh, here's another one of those famous purports that rips Grihastha life to shreds, and you know, all the Grihasthas cringe as the sannyasis and brahmacharis sit around with big grins on their face and pointing and laughing and whispering, yeah, that one over there, there's another one over there, like that. But what it's pointing out is actually what you're dealing with. Right? Let us say you're choosing an occupation and you want to be a trainer of animals. So you have two options. You could, you know, take up training of hamsters or that of poisonous snakes. Right? Now, of these, there's going to be a lot more opportunity for, you know, your show with the poisonous snake. But if you think it's just as simple as training a hamster, then you've got problems. And you're going to have problems. In fact, you'll probably be killed. So therefore, the Shastra speaks very strongly about the Grihastha Ashram for this point, that if you don't use it properly, you're finished. Don't ever think that you're in the same position as a Brahmachari Vanaprastha Sannyasi. What you're dealing with is so much more dangerous, it can keep you here a long, long time. A desire creates seeds that can encompass hundreds or thousands of lifetimes. Right? Prabhupada mentioned about one very famous, you know, world famous, internationally famous sitar player, saying he had been doing this for 1,000 lifetimes. That's why he's so good. Right? And we see from Brahma Samhita, then it mentions that the yogis can drill the breath for millions of lifetimes. Right? So this is what we're talking about. Right? Does that make sense? So that is what one's dealing with, and one has to know that. So anybody who doesn't know that is actually foolish. And all comments like being realistic and this and that, you know, the typical common, like across the board comments that are made to rationalize the whole thing and make it look just as simple as, you know, falling off a bridge or something. Then, or say in this way, falling into a well. Then, these are the words of someone who's not educated. Here, a five-year-old boy is more educated. So what's being pointed out is that this is the most difficult. But we see he's not saying that it's not to be used. He's saying it should be used in such a way that it creates attachment to the Lord. Because we see Prahlad Maharaj himself grew up, became the king, became a Grihastha. That's not the problem. The problem is in an uneducated, foolish way, entering into it, and then becoming proud and thinking one is very expert. That's the foolishness. So that's why then these things are being made. So it has the greatest opportunity to engage the maximum amount of one's conditioned nature in the way of material needs and desires in the Lord's service. You can't do it in any other order to that degree. So it can uproot the maximum amount of material desires if you know what you're doing. If it's used as a Grihastha in the Varnashram system trying to be Krishna conscious. But if it's used as a Grihamedi, for material benefit, sense gratification, then it's the deepest, darkest well, where what you're looking for, you will not find. Because it's not there. You know what I'm saying? Think about it. You can sit there and hold the child on your lap and pat them on the head, stroke them, kiss them, hug them, and you could do that 24/7 and you'd still feel something's missing. Think about it. Right? The boy and girl can sit on the bench, hold hands, look at as many sunsets that they want. Still something's missing. Right? You can eat as much nice food or wear as much nice clothes or have as much nice bed. Right? How many times can you run your foot, you know, in the bed up and down the sheets and go, wow, nice satin sheets? Right? Or how many times can you fluff the pillow that is made out of such soft material? You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that there's nothing there. But because we think it's there, therefore we connect it to Krishna. And the connecting it to Krishna, that will give the satisfaction we're looking for. But because of the nature of the mind, we have to get it through that. Right? You eat any food, you'll be nourished, right? But one individual wants to get that nourishment through this kind of food, another one through that kind of food. It's all prasad. It's all been offered to Krishna. It'll all take you back to Godhead. Right? Somebody likes the rice, somebody the chapati, somebody the sabzi, somebody the sweet. So the point is that's not the problem. Right? The point is that because it's prasad offered to Krishna, you satisfy your material need in that particular way, but you become purified and elevated. Right? That's the... Does that make sense? But at the same time, because you have that liking for that thing, then there's a thing. Yes, if you eat too much of the sabzi, you may get a bad stomach, or too much of the chutney, or too many sweets, or this or that. You can get sick in so many various ways. Therefore, it must be balanced and proper. Right? If we say, oh, if you eat too many sweets, you can get diabetes, does that mean no sweets? No. It means you eat it in the proper way, the proper proportion, proper time, appropriate way, just that. Does that make sense? So none of these verses are meaning that grihastha life shouldn't be there. It's meaning that know what you're dealing with. Know that it is a dark well, there's no water inside, you're looking for something. So therefore, if you bring in Krishna into this dark well, then Krishna Surya Sam, it's like light. Then you get the same effect as the other orders. But that means it's a lot more work. It's not that just we say, yes, you know, no big grihe taco, money taco, yeah, haribo, work done, it's all equal, and then I go back to just doing exactly what I've been doing the last moment before. No, it means you got a lot more work. You're dealing with more stuff, it's more work, right? I'm going to cook for lunch today, one preparation, enough for one person. I'm going to cook today 10 preparations for one person, which is going to be more work. Right? So now, to say, no, no, there's no more work between 10 preparations and one preparation, then anybody who's a cook will say, this person doesn't know what they're talking about. Right? Therefore, Kalad Maharaj and others say, those who don't know what they're doing in grihastha life are the biggest idiots in the world. That's their point. Their point is not that it's a problem. There's no problem. You like a variety of foodstuff, cook it. You're happy with 10 preparations. Like the elephant, the North Indian elephants. They won't even stand there ready to eat unless you've got 5 different things to eat in front of them. They gotta see it. Then they'll happen to eat one at a time. Right? South Indian elephants, you just give them coconut, you know, branches and they're happy. You don't even have to cut it for them. Right? The North Indian ones, you know, you have to prepare it for them. You already have to break it up and smash it a bit. right? So, you know, but in any case, when it comes to, you know, the elephant going around, it doesn't matter if they're north or south. Right? Does that make sense? So, the problem's not the volume. The problem is, because of the volume, there tends to be a mentality of simplification, or let's say, of ignorance. I guess that's why they say dark well. Because there's so much there that you have to be aware of so much of the time, the tendency is to go a bit numb. Right? And because of this numbness, then we find it starts to get worse. Right? Brahmachari is insensitive. He walks into the Brahmachari ashram after, you know, his, you know, finishing his rounds at, you know, 11 o'clock at night, and flicks on the switch. Right? And all the other Brahmacharis start yelling and screaming, telling him to turn off the light. You know, and then he says, one minute, and then there's a bit of an argument, and then the light goes off, they go to sleep. And that's it. Right? Try doing that in Grihastha life. You know? The reaction is very different. Like that. So, does it understand? So, if one is not aware, then the reaction is so much worse. It's 10 times, well, let's say, technically, 9 times worse. Right? Because the sensitivity of the women is 9 times more than that of the men. So unless the men is working 24/7 to be sensitive, there's going to be a problem. Guaranteed. There's no alternative. So you have to know what you're doing. So now to take that focus, that intensity, and focus that on connecting to the Supreme, what good results you get? Right? Any self-help course is going to teach you 3 things. This is all of them. No exception. One is you have to have focus. 2, with that focus, therefore you must do something, right? Doing nothing gets you nothing. Doing something gets you something, right? You'll get from what your past is, but if you do nothing, eventually the past runs out. Right? And the worst thing is it runs out and you haven't gone back to Godhead. Right? So, you have to make an endeavor. And 3, you have to be dependent upon the Lord. They may not use the Lord, but there's some superior power that is going to, that is affecting the results of your activities. They're going to say these 3 things, that's all. Then they're going to give you details of how to gain focus, what is focus, various techniques and methods, how to endeavor, what is endeavor, and what are the various ways to understand Daiva, or the hand of the Supreme. That's all they do. One gives emphasis here, one gives there, one gives this exam, one gives that. So it looks like many, many, many things. It's only that one thing. So, here is an opportunity for focus. You don't focus, you get cut. Prabhupada says, you're shaving and you lose attention for one moment, you get cut. So, the danger is being pointed out. But in the opposite, then, if that focus is used properly and you use it according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, as mentioned here, in the Vishnu Purana, then that focus and that endeavor then gets you so much benefit. It says one can very easily elevate oneself. Very easily. Because you're already focused, you're already endeavoring, and because you're Krishna conscious, you're already dependent upon the Supreme. You already have everything. Does that make sense? So that's the point. It's not saying it's bad. It's saying that if misused, then you're going to get a worse result than misusing being a brahmachari or being a vanaprastha. Right? that make sense? So this is the whole point, is it's the most difficult, most dangerous. So then Prabhupada's making the point is that means he's asked, this is the essence of all religion, this is practical, the essence of all knowledge. And so then from this, then all persons can benefit. And in this case, then Prahlada is recommending it to his own father, right? As we will see as time goes on. Father doesn't exactly appreciate the presentation of the essence and practical application. Any questions or comments?
Say again?
We need the
Varnash. Okay.
And also, keep the community in state effort. Go back, we should need the Varnash.
To go back?
Go back. Get it better.
Oh, to make it better.
Okay, so Maharaj is commenting just on this in support of this Vishnu Purana, that Prabhupada is saying that the Brahmins, he said. Brahmins and sannyasis are falling down, therefore we need Varnashram. And that this will then make it better, because everybody can be engaged fully according to the nature. That's the whole idea.
Prabhupada made a comment about seeing you run a country than it is
run a family.
Yeah. The thought comes to mind in the Shri Maharaj, if you have many followers, students, disciples, etc., I may have one son who screws hard for my wife's
yeah.
with a big teacher, ramifications and make seemingly a lot.
Okay. Saying it's more difficult to run a family than it is a whole country. It's just you're quoting Prabhupada. So then he's saying then in the same line that therefore the grihastha may mess up his wife or his son, but a teacher or someone in a leading position might mess up more persons. That hasn't, it's true in one sense and in another sense it's different. One is that you mess up the son's life, you mess up your son's wife's life and his kid's life and anybody else, it just keeps going. You know? Like I was speaking to someone the other day, they had no concept of what it meant to actually be dealt with in an affectionate way. They had no idea. They know that people talk about it, you see it in the movies, you hear it, but they had never experienced it. So how do you explain to someone like that about God's affection for you, or he's come as Lord Chaitanya, or he's there for you, because he's never had anyone there for him. And that was because his father messed it up. Right? And then that person's going to talk to others, so the ramifications are very great. You have the teacher messes up, but it's at a certain level. The sannyasi leaves, and the guru falls, it's to a certain level. Right? More like that spiritual has there, but your family life goes on. But in this case, if your family life becomes so messed up, many people can't spiritually function. I saw one mother, her son died, and it's all Krishna's fault, and she hated Krishna. And this was the senior lady initiated by Prabhupada, been around, big preaching, big this, big that, you could go on and on and on. And because her son died in a car crash, she was driving a car, of course. It's Krishna's fault. And she couldn't deal with Krishna, look at Krishna, pray to Krishna, chant japa for a long, long time. I think it was months and months and months. So the point is you'll find much of the difficulties that go on, that people aren't dynamically involved in spiritual life, it's because their family life doesn't work. Because in any case, even if the teacher messes up, the temple president messes up, this and that, you still have your family. And you still got to deal with it. So the point is for the teachers, they should look at it that, yes, we have much more effect. But at the same time, it should not be used to distract from the importance of the full endeavor of every hospital life. Right? To see a country, you can get ministers and other people to run it. Right? You can't get someone else to tell your wife how much you like her. Right? You know what I'm saying? You got to do it yourself. That's why it's harder than running a country. This country, you can get people to help. Family, you're on your own. It's you. That's it. You know, every moment, you know, at every time. And with a country, you can set rules and have a constitution, and it runs in that way. The family, every moment, like a kaleidoscope, is changing. And the definitions are adjusting. So, therefore, it's much harder. Right? Yes?
One is how in our society we train brahmacharis to be exemplary grihasthas. If you undergo brahmacharya either by being political or by going to preaching in full distribution. But then when you come into the transitional phase, if you have desires and you want to start fulfilling them, there's hardly any scope for training. Maybe in India there's some family structure still existing where you can rely on elders and parents and friends. But overall, in our society, what mechanisms would you like to see in place to actually help that transitional period, which is a very crucial period, because, as I say, when you mess up in the beginning, it's very hard to make up for it very well. And the second part, which kind of ties into that, is what scope do we give our brahmacharya students who want to get married? I mean, you see many temples, especially in India, there's maybe not crores, but hundreds of brahmacharis, but not necessarily by qualification, but by default, because there is no scope to move on, there's no social progression. Sometimes Prabhupada used to say, if you want to get married, then you have to go out into the world and do your own thing. But we see that a lot of our members are not able to go out into the world and do their own thing because either they're not strong enough, they're not trained enough. So, what's your advice?
Can you hear? Yeah? One of the things would be in the first question about training, what is the training, is knowing what's there. Because, so the leadership has to actually know what is grihastha life and what are the things that make it work. That you have some skill to make money isn't actually what makes it work. There's plenty of billionaires that, you know, have, you know, lose half of it to in a divorce. So basically you come down to there's a few main fundamental principles that all brahmacharis, no matter what they are learning, but up to now, just what I've seen, no one makes the connection between that and grihastha life. And if you have those, you can't be a grihastha, because Prabhupada said a first-class brahmachari will be a first-class grihastha. But you have to make the connection. You know, like so many times would say, an odd example, let's say, have you ever had an experience where you sat down with a devotee and you started a discussion that turned into a philosophical argument, and you go on for hours and hours and hours, and then by the end of it, you find out that the two of you are saying exactly the same thing, but you just had different words that you used. You know? It's something very simple like that. And then you find out that it wasn't there. So, the basic principle we see that in brahmacharya life is, the first thing is, humility. Right? Another is knowledge. Another is respect. Another is menial service, or the service attitude. Another is purity and control of the senses. So basically that sums up Brahmacharya life. If someone is being trained properly in those, then they can be a successful grihastha. Because when you're dealing, it means go through it this practice, just show a connection, because otherwise it sounds. Knowledge, if you don't understand, in other words, every situation, every subject matter, so in this case it's, you know, we're talking grihastha life, but any subject matter, there's a body of knowledge there. There's something to know. And if you know the field, you can work with the field. If you don't know what the field is, how do you work with it? If you don't know what a woman is, how do you work with one? Right? So you have to know what you're dealing with. So that's the first thing. So if you don't know, then you know you have to find out. So at least you understand that there is such a thing as knowledge. Humility. We're taking these at random, maybe it will come together in order, but humility. If you're not humble, no man can successfully live with a woman. The women, in a very quiet way, demand it. Because when, according to Shastra, when a woman is angry, the only way to deal with it by the man is humility. There's not one other alternative given. If he tries anything else, it'll just escalate. Because the woman is angry not over the particular item itself. Because the things, even though it appears that way, is not, things aren't what's really important to the woman. What's important is the emotion that can be gained from it. Right? You have nice clothes, so they like lights and nice clothes, lots of, but from that, then there is the interaction relationships that they will have from others from it. It's not the thing itself, because many times they deal with it very, in a way that's not, it can be even very childlike. Men actually take their things more seriously. When they deal with something, it's got to be exact and this and that. But because it's theirs, they do, there's also that take it for granted. Just things in their field. Right? But in the same way, the women, it's the emotions are their field. So they know how to deal with it very nice. It has to be right. Men's things have to be, women's emotions have to be right. So therefore, what's wrong is something in the emotional area. Much of the time, what's the fact, and if you're looking at it from logic, it's the woman has made a mistake. And therefore the man very confidently goes forward that he's right. But his dealing with her mistake is his mistake. Okay? So if you're not humble, it's not going to work. Does that make sense? So therefore, as a brahmacharya, you learn real humility. Not this kind of, oh yes, I'm the most flawed. No, 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 I'm the most flawed. No, 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 I'm the most flawed. Oh no, you know, so I'm the most. It's not that kind of. It's the kind where when you're told something to do, you accept it without getting disturbed. Right? Does that make sense? It's just, wife wants this yesterday. You could have said, yeah, but I told you that 3 months ago we should prepare. That's only going to make it worse. The point is it just gets done. So without training as a brahmacharya, humility, it's not going to work. Service attitude, it has to be dynamic. Men can be inactive, women can't. So if the man's not active, is not willing to serve, willing to produce some result, women cannot be satisfied. They must always be active. Right? Man doesn't talk, doesn't do anything, this and that, that's major form of a disaster. So the brahmacharya is always active, not lazy, always willing to do service, looking for what can be done. That impresses the woman. Here is someone she can depend upon, and she will be taken care of. Respect. Respect means that you're going to have to be, if you're really respectful, means you're going to have to be sensitive. Because respect just, oh yes, respect, yes, you know, Guru Maharaj, this, that. But, you know, at the same time, as Guru Maharaj has to sit on this rickety seat that at any time could fall over and he could get seriously injured. But because we've decided this is the way we want to glorify him, and then we're going to, after that, he sat there for 4 hours, not knowing he's going to fall off or not, and probably his back and legs and everything else hurts. Then we're going to stick him up on an elephant to ride around, which is one of the most uncomfortable things you can ever ride on. And then and we're in ecstasy. Oh, Guru Maharaj on the elephant. And he's dying. So that's not respect. That's called insensitivity. Like that. Do all those things. Get a picture. Then you can do whatever you like. You can hang him on the wall. You know, like that. It doesn't matter. Okay, Guru Maharaj, hang him up by his... No, not about it. Picture. Hang him. No problem. You can hang him crooked. Still it works. Right? So that respect for the other as an individual, and that they have needs and ways of doing it, a woman is just like that, and that's the way it is, and there's nothing you can do about it. And therefore, you've accepted to be part of it, that's your individual, independent decision. That's your manliness. Not being the tough, cool, I'm the center, all service around me. That's feminine. That's why it doesn't work, because the woman didn't want to marry another woman. She wanted to marry me. Sorry. Does that make some sense? So, therefore, that kind of thing, that he learns respect. And control of the senses. If he's not controlled in his senses, the woman will not respect him. Because the point is this, because sense gratification is the field. Woman is senses. So for her, just moving through the senses and different aspects is normal. So what she's moving through, that's up to her. The man may have this idea that if he's not sense-controlled, then whatever is a particular kind of interaction he wants, he won't get it. He'll get angry and frustrated before it happens. Because the more important it is, the longer the woman will drag it out. Because for the woman, it's the preliminaries and the conclusion that's important. It's not the activity itself. Therefore, if you're not sense-controlled, you can't get through the preliminaries. And if you're not sense-controlled, you won't stay around for the conclusions. Right? So, one can see is brahmachari life is the perfect training to be a grihastha, if the connection is made. That's why then, in the Vedic system, so much is put on the students being humble, having a service attitude, doing all that. But the fun thing is, in the contemporary environment, that's considered child abuse. Oh, they have to work. Oh, they have to be home. Why aren't we just encouraging them? But it's like this, because the teacher who knows the system knows that if they're not trained now, while they're in the formative years, as an adult, it's practically impossible. There's kind of a door that closes at 22 years of age. It's very hard to over-open again, unless the person really sees a need. But up to that age, you can mold them. But at that time, it's kind of like that sin. You know, you can like finalize, just like you said, there's a conclusion. So after all that training, then 22 to 25, that's where you kind of wind things up, and that's where you make all your connections and things like that. Because then you bring out the importance of it. Like that. Of course, you can do that earlier age, but I'm just saying that. So, therefore, the kids are washing pots. That's so that they'll actually learn how to go out there and do whatever it is that they can do according to their nature. They're sweeping. They're keeping clean. They're controlling their senses. They're all eating at regular times. They're doing all these things. That way, they can be a good grihastha. Because you may say, well, thing is, in the house it's irregulated, so therefore unless they have a regulated kind of like foundation, they won't be able to function within an irregular environment. Right? If you're confident, even if you're in a situation that's upside down, you know what it's supposed to look like, so therefore you can tolerate it. And you know in any given situation a woman will never respond the same twice, therefore you're not looking for it. So then today it's going to go this way and get to it, tomorrow it's going to go that way and get to it. But it'll get there. So that means you have to be sense-controlled. Then it works. The whole thing works. So what it is what Prabhupada's given us is so valuable, but we haven't understood it. It means if you're going to be good on Sadhana, why book distribution is one of the major things of training. Because you have to have the same qualities. You can't be a good book distributor on the street unless you manifest that humility, that respect, that sensitivity, the sense control, all this. You can't just come up and go, hey, here's a book, you know, like that. You're a nonsense, and we're God conscious. You should read this, and then you'll stop being a nonsense, and you'll also be an okay, nice person. Besides, you should even give a good donation. Will it work? Probably not. You might catch a slow here and there that it might work on, but... probably other than that, no. We'll get to you in a second. Does that make sense? So that's why, because it puts the thing, all those qualities that a brahmachari needs, really in the spotlight. Right? But there needs some maturity because you're having to do it on your own. Well, children aren't necessarily having that maturity, so the teacher needs, and the parents have to do it for them. They have to ensure that their environment is such that they will get that result. So basically it's just a matter of knowing what it is you're dealing with, then it's very easy to make those connections because it's already going on. Right? And then further detail, of course, from, you know, experience and some other things, and that of course is there, but the major foundation is already there. Does that make sense? So that's what Prabhupada is saying, is this training is actually what's missing. You know, he said, boil the milk. Boil the milk means now you're cooking. You have milk. Now you're going to cook it down. He didn't say, now we need to get some milk. He already said, we have the milk. Now it's a matter of cooking it, refining it, developing it, like that. So it's not that we have to invent something new. We need to actually realize what we already have. You know, like a child, he grows up in his father's house. He's very wealthy. He doesn't know. He doesn't know how the whole thing works. But by being in that environment, he sees how the father deals, how his parents deal, you know, how they deal with all their friends and relatives and business acquaintances. Then on his own, he already has all the tools for himself, becoming a very good, you know, businessman, very good grihastha, very good everything. But if the connections aren't made, he may make a lot of mistakes before he figures out that he already has the tools. But if the father says these things, you know, the mother says these things, or the teacher, or the well-wisher, whoever it is, then you make that connection. That would be, you know, so we're not actually in a doomsday scenario. It's more like these verses are heavy only to make one wake up and realize the situation. But actually, and technically, it's very easy to put the whole community and everything together if everybody would understand that this is actually what has to be done. The hard part is convincing. Like that, that's the hard part. But otherwise, the tools, everything, we already have it. You know, and to be good grihasthas and not be amatas, we already know we're not this body. But we know I have a conditioned nature that's specific, it has certain needs and desires, therefore the Varnashram system can fulfill that and connect it to Krishna. Right? The karmis can fulfill it, but not get Krishna. And the jnanis can ignore it and not get Krishna. Right? They can't deal with it, and they don't. But the devotee, because he uses buddhi yoga, karma and jnana combined, therefore he can do the activity, get the result, deal with it in knowledge, understand he's not the body, free himself from it, and go back to Godhead. So it's like, it's the perfect system. It's just being aware that we actually have it, you know. It's like the kid. playing, I think it was one very large diamond or something. He found the kid was playing. It was a very kind of black skull. And he's playing. That was his toy. You know, find out it's big. Well, he also had that Krishna's pastime, Shamatara Jewel, right? It's a toy, right? This thing gives out, I forget what it was, 100 and some odd kilos of gold a day, right? We'd probably be happy if we got, you know, 10 grams of gold a day or something. You know, kilo, hundreds of kilos a day. Is that okay? Is that kind of do something? Kind of. Why? What is missing?
Well, the structural thing was to say, your emphasis on the quality of character development, which I produce very much as a foundation, but as we know, human beings are social animals. So if you don't put systems in place, people are just going to fall over the place, and it's all going to be very loose. So you mentioned the Thai family unit, where the son or the child learns from the parents by seeing them do it. Now, I don't know about you, but I can just guess in my own life, most of us didn't have that chance to grow up in such a way. So, okay, by history we can read, we can learn from ideal situations, but what we haven't perceived in our own eyes. So,
perception comes from practice.
Yeah. So when somebody goes through Brahmacharya training and then desires to get married, I'm asking, where is that faculty? Where is that course? Whether it be a crash course or an MA, BA, PhD, where is that? Besides going into the world, into the school of hard knocks, where is that training to help that person in the transitional phase, you know, like counseling or whatever, more experience? Because who went through and have some experience under their belt, I see that training is not enough, and that's why we kind of like think of this. It's very much experience.
Yeah, no, that's true. But what I said is the hardest part of this equation is people accepting that this is the problem. It's just like until you acknowledge that I have a cold, no doctor in the world can fix it. Right? So, from my traveling around, the only obstacle to establishing these things is the devotee's, you know, adamant position that everything's fine. That's what I found. Because anybody who is inquisitive can find out. Because it's all there. And the Gurukul system, it is included in it because the Gurukul is made as a small society. It means the elements of it that work in society, not that the example is, right? Here you're washing a pot, there you're, you know, having a service or a job. But if you can wash a pot, you can be a temple president. If you can't wash a pot, you cannot be a temple president. Because you won't have the focus. You'll need others to do it for you. Right? So therefore, it's all there. It's just a matter of teaching. So the Vedic system, it's already included. But if you put it into a more contemporary environment, sometimes it may be missed just because of the modern academy doesn't work on the essence. They don't work from the inside out. They work from generally the outside in. You know, it's like you start off with the externals, and then when you do, you know, postgraduate work, they actually get down to the essence. But the Vedic starts with the essence, and based on that, then they teach you all the skills you need. So you're dealing with essence all the way through. So you first hear, then you have to practice. But unless people are willing to hear and willing to practice, there will be no realization. Realization only comes from practice based on knowledge. Practice without knowledge will get you some very, you know, good skills. And knowledge without practice will get you some really well thought out theory, but it will neither will give you realization. So unless the knowledge is accepted, and unless the knowledge is practiced, you won't get it. But it's something, because it's something that anybody can apply today and get a result today. That's the thing. The science is so nice, it works so nice, it works so well. But people just have that faith that it's a science, rather than just, I'm a man or I'm a woman, so, or I'm married, so therefore that's it. You know, like that. You know, so There's something more to human life. If you only had to teach eating, sleeping, mating, and defending to the kids, then everyone would be the perfect parent. But if you're trying to teach human life, then training is involved like that. Because otherwise, parents do a very good job at taking care of the health and emotional needs and these things generally. You know, sometimes not, but generally that's not the weak point. The weak point is actually developing the human values. So that's where I see it. So to put it in place, that's the easy part. You just have some discussions, people hear it. Those who are already married can understand if they're doing things nicely or not, where the strengths and weaknesses of what they're doing, why they got this result. Oh, that's why that happened. Or, oh, that's why that worked. Because they may understand the science. Those who are wanting to get married will understand the science so that when they go into it, they're aware of it. Because if you already have the knowledge, you'll already be prepared. So the idea is the maximum amount of this knowledge should be put in before marriage. Because anybody will learn anything before marriage because they want to get married. Once they're married, somehow or another, I don't know what it is, but that final going, you know, around the fire or something, they suddenly became a PhD, you know, in married life. I'm not sure what it is. It's a very unique phenomenon like that. You know? So it's harder then because the sense of ownership is such that what you own works the way you want it. I own a car, therefore the car sits there and the car looks good. And if it doesn't look good, it needs to be washed. And whenever I want to take it out for a spin, it's ready to go. And not only that, is what I want it to do, it does. I want it to go right, it goes right, or it goes left, it goes left. And if something goes wrong, then it's got to be fixed. Nothing to do with me. Right? That's ownership. So marriage needs ownership, so you're dealing with this. This is my husband, he's going to do everything right, the way I want it, when I want it, as I want it. And so there's no scope for that. There's some adjustment. And the man the same for the wife. And the adult, the parents, or the kids. So unless the knowledge is already in there, the possession takes grip of the situation. And attachment, the definition given by Rupa Goswami, means that one's attraction for the other person has crossed beyond reason. So that means logic goes out the window. Right? That's why women don't like a logical explanation of how they should emotionally deal, because if logic is there, that means you're not attached to them. Therefore, that's what they're getting upset about, not your logical explanation. They're getting upset that this logic that you're using when I'm in an emotional state means there's no attachment. That's why they're getting angry. And then the man says, well, what are they getting angry about? I was just saying, I was simply trying to help you get over this. Yeah, that you're helping, but you're helping from what point? You know, some outside guy, you're my husband. You're not, you know, some outside higher, you know, person that we bring in. So these kind of things, does that make sense?
Yes. It seems that all systems are based on loving relationships.
All systems are based on loving relations.
In society, if you don't develop a focus or training on these level of exchanges, there's no question of catching up on this.
Maharaj mentioned that relationships are based on that affection, so if we don't practice these, you know, six lakshanas of attachment, or priti lakshana, the affection, then it's not going to go, yes. And what we were talking about is the science behind that, how to be respectful and sensitive and these kind of things, so that we are careful to see that we are doing that. And that's there. The quality of woman must be shyness. And the chastity is to serve the husband. She must serve the husband, yes, but also, that's the dharma, yes, we're saying that. But now, let us take that further. So dharma to serve the husband means she's supposed to follow the husband, right? The dharma is to follow the husband. But the point is, yes, but if the husband's not going somewhere, how should she follow? So you want the wife to be respectful, but if the husband's not respectful to her, how is she following? So she's following the husband. He's got an attitude, so she follows by having an attitude. He doesn't serve, she follows by not serving. Does that make sense? So therefore, if the man is the independent one, he's the one that has to start it. Right? Arrogant means audacity is the quality of the man the woman likes. She says no, but he keeps going. Right? But it's sensitive. So that's what they're looking for. Woman is by nature passive. When they take the aggressive role, that's unnatural. They only do it to kickstart the man that will do something. But once he's started, they immediately go passive. Because that's their dharma. So that shyness comes if they're protected. A woman can't be shy if she's not protected. You protect a woman, she is shy. She doesn't want to go anywhere alone. That's if she's protected. But if she's not been protected, she has to go alone. Therefore, how can she be shy? So, therefore, they're dying inside. The women that are aggressive and out front, they're dying inside because they don't want to do it. Right? They simply want the men to do what they're supposed to do. So the whole thing comes. Here's the interesting thing that came to me the other day. Why does a Shastra always say he? Right? And then we get into this whole trip, what about she, with the status not equal? No. It says he because it's the guy that's supposed to do all this. And the woman follows him. So these instructions are meant for him. If he does it, she'll follow it. He doesn't do it, she's not allowed to do it. You know, or she has to do it on her own and she doesn't feel good about that. Is that okay? So they follow. That's what they should do. But that doesn't work if that's what's told. You know, it's just like the horse should do this, but if the trainer doesn't know what they're doing, they won't learn to do like that. So that's the point. Men make women. But if you don't have men, you don't have women. You understand? A father makes a daughter, right? And a husband makes a wife. Right? That's there. And you see, a son makes a mother. So it's dependent upon the man. The man is the key element. We sometimes say it's the woman's fault, but actually all this problem is the man's fault. Women are willing to follow. But they have to be convinced that the guy's going somewhere. He's not going anywhere. They're not stupid. So that's the thing. So the whole thing's on the men. And it's that simple. They're waiting. The man just understands this, does this, they'll respond immediately. Of course, they're going to test to make sure that this is real because it hasn't been real for so long. They're going to test. But when they're convinced, they're fine. The man should be fully Krishna conscious, at least be endeavoring for that and know what he's doing. That's why it says endeavor with knowledge, Krishna. Krishna demands that of anything. So let alone means he's telling Arjuna, do your duties that way. So it's a grihastha, means endeavor with knowledge. So how can you be a grihastha and not know what is a woman or what are you supposed to do? And then claim that you're doing Vaishkarya. You know? Like that. So it's not just okay shooting the air, it's not dharma that it's only knowledge, endeavor with proper knowledge. It's also ashram. So when they're there, the man is the lead of society if he leads. If he doesn't, women are practical. They can't sit around. Men can go in this state of ignorance and just kind of be a blob because of the nature of the masculine element of sankarshan. But women are aniruddha, it's the mind. Something has to be going on. It must be an experience that they appreciate. So there has to be action. That's why a man can just sit there and meditate, and a woman is doing 10 things at once. Just because it has to be. So, therefore, if the man doesn't do it, the woman will make herself active and will try to fill the gap, though it's not her first preference. Probably not even her 10th preference. Yes, ma'am? Yeah.
Thank you.
about?
Connections, how some people are making the connections in that training. So maybe those connections would have been made because this isn't a prison, it was just an observation, but maybe in our institution, this is a late idea that we haven't appreciated the opposite gender of being a valid, integral part of the whole. Maybe in the East women, this is that they have a position in society, they have status, whereas in the West, nearly objectified, okay? So you have a movement that has sprouted in the West with Eastern ideas, but we still have the baggage of Western objectification.
Yeah.
So the state, the object, desires, we have to entirely.
Could y'all hear? No. So she's making the point that in Brahmachari training that we see is that sometimes it's that the woman, like the Western culture, is objectified. So then, rather than seeing that the importance of women in the social structure and their, you know, value as individuals, that they just are avoiding them rather than understanding, appreciating their value. So in one sense, that would be correct. But what we were discussing was men becoming men. So if you objectify something, where is the center? Yourself or the object? If you objectify something, which is the center of attention? Yourself or the object? It may be, but the object means what's important, yourself or the object, if you objectify something. Getting closer. It ceases to be personal, therefore who's the person? You are the object. Okay, so if you're the center, then if we look at a relationship, does that make you a man or a woman? It makes you a woman. Therefore, the problem is, what you're saying is the real problem is the brahmacharis have been women, not men. They'll
be offended.
They'll be offended. Who will be offended?
The Brahmacharis.
But the point is I'm a sannyasi, I can save you. It's like, who cares? Because the point is if they're a real Brahmachari, they won't be offended, because they won't be. And if they're actually acting as a woman because they think they're the center of the universe, then they will be offended. So they're not a Brahmachari. So therefore I can speak. If it's a derogatory comment, you can make it that way. See, that means we want to talk theory here. Let's go back. In general, kind of in the West, that you could say up to the 40s, kind of the man-woman relationship worked fairly well. It was, you know, women were respected, you know, men would take the hat, they would go, women go through the door first, all these things, the respect was there. In the 50s, you can see the culture, the women were more objectified, you know, by what you're saying. So basically, what was happening is that men are getting less masculine. Though they're cutting the profile of being tough and cool and hard and like that, but that's, you know, any monkey can do that, right? That's what monkeys do. You know, they're cool, they're tough. Go to a zoo, you can see it. So then the women started at that time exerting their independence. So that manifests up in the 60s. So now the point is when women get upset, if the men don't get humble, the women get angrier. So their pushing of, oh, it's this word, or you're not getting equal, those are all just pushings of trying to establish the point of where the men are wrong. It's not actually the equality of this, that, or anything. That's not the point at all. That's only presented because that's also just the way feminine nature works. You know what I'm saying? So the point what we're making is, if you want to have a solution, then it's the men to understand the duty to move forward. And the women will automatically reciprocate. That's there. So the solution is it just has to be practiced. It'll take time. It's not that problem. The problem is these things, the men treat the women badly, that's repulsion. That means they need them. But they're not, they don't know how to deal with them. A real brahmachari can deal with the women, but he has no need. Right? But he'll follow the etiquette and deal properly. Right? There's nothing from the gain from women. So the solution is not to involve them or make them understand the importance in that way. It's a matter of understanding the concept of what is male and what is female and how it works. Because that ultimately is how Radha and Krishna work. We're only a reflection of that. Right? Have you ever heard of any pastime where Radharani gets angry at Krishna and he has an attitude? Ever heard of one? No, he always becomes humble. There's not one situation where he doesn't. So that's how men are supposed to act. He's the man, right? She's the woman. So everything else is a reflection of that. So why wouldn't we work on the same principle? You know, does that make sense? In other words, we're going beyond all the things that could start arguments and fights over various definitions, and just getting down to simply what will work. Because people, it may take a lot for them to really understand. It's one of the biggest problems for men is to understand that how they're dealing and their identity as a man is actually feminine. That I'm the man, I'm the guy that calls the shots, what I say goes, and all that means I'm the center. But that's feminine. Feminine is the center. Because Krishna is rasa, he's independent. But to experience rasa, he therefore interacts with his energies on their terms, not on his terms. He deals with Mother Yashoda as she wants to serve him as a mother. He responds that way. He doesn't try to, well, I feel like, you know, friendship rasa now, so hey, Mother Yashoda, let's do some leapfrog now. You know what I'm saying? It's based on her attitude. Therefore, if the man wants to deal with the woman, he has to deal according to their nature and how they see men and how they want to deal.
At the same time, when Radharani, if she feels presumptuous or manipulative or puffed up, not to say Radharani does, but say a woman does.
Radharani does.
Yeah. So the Krishna disappears. So on the other
hand. Yeah, but why does he disappear? Here. See, these are the other things. Huh? In the Krishna Samhuta, Prema Samhuta, it's revealed the reason he disappears is not because of Radharani. That's why he likes her, is because of that. Right? Because her presumptuousness in that is because for Krishna's pleasure. She being the Srup Shakti, whatever, she knows exactly how to fulfill all of Krishna's desires. No one else does. Not one of the gopi does, because they're all expansions of her. That means their personality is something less than her. That means they're going to have those qualities less to please Krishna. Krishna can be pleased in the qualities they have, but not as complete as her. That's why she gets angry if he's with another gopi. Because he can't be fully satisfied. Right? That's why she becomes angry. Not because she's not being pleased, because Krishna's not. And Krishna disappears because he wants to dance in the rasa dance with all the millions of gopis, but he wants to be in the center with Radha and Krishna so that they can dance and enjoy all this. But the other gopis in that circle don't accept the supremacy of Radharani. They think, I'm just as good as her. They think they're rivals. So therefore Krishna disappears so that when they think they're attached. But when they see Radharani's attack, because he disappears, but he leaves with Radharani. And then when they come, he disappears again, because then they can see is you're so distracted. You're, you know, imagining the pastimes, you're talking to the trees, you're fainting. But when they see Radharani, they understand 100% that their love for Krishna doesn't even compare to hers. It's like a mustard seed compared to Mount Meru. Then they're all willing to take their positions in the rasa dance with Radharani's screen. That's Vishnu. And that is explained by Srimati Radharani to Krishna, who has come in the form of a celestial maiden. So that's horse's mouth. Okay. What about Rukmini? She fainted. Yes, because it's like this. If you're dependent and your existence is dependent upon someone else and that connection is lost, that means your identity is lost. So you faint.
Why?
Why did Krishna do that? He's playing. Because she wasn't upset. You don't play when you're upset. She was fanning, serving, and having a nice discussion. And then he just says that. He didn't expect she to faint. But by doing that, then it shows her attachment. Another one would just become angry. And because she's right wing, she fainted. If he had done that to Satyabhama, you would have seen fireworks. So that's the difference between right and left. Left means they're aggressive in their show of affection, while right is passive in their show of affection. But the same attachment, the same principles work on both. Just one is more obvious they're upset, and the other one they may keep it more quiet.
The only point I was trying to make before is the status of this. And if you validate that, it's just that I felt in the movement.
Because we were talking about the men. Right?
No, I didn't feel you were going to get here to stay.
Oh, okay.
I was trying to make a comment that in the movement, I felt the right
way. Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, well, in one sense, means you're correct, that in the movement, the brahmacharis are not validating the importance of women in the movement, because technically it's not their job. The problem is that the grihasthas aren't validating it. Otherwise, they'd be following the science. Because when a brahmachari wants to get married, he doesn't work it out with other brahmacharis, he goes to grihasthas. So technically, because the brahmachari is not really supposed to deal with and interact, but if he has to, then he deals properly according to etiquette, but it's not his field. Because to be able to deal with the woman, you have to be able to be observant outside of your area, right? Means the woman is observant within her sphere, but the man has to be observant outside of the sphere. So, in the house, the boy will grow up being taken care of by the mother. Everything happens by magic. He never becomes conscious why it works. He doesn't really understand how food gets there, clothes get clean, house gets clean, nothing. So, girls are. They're aware of it. They see the work. So, girls don't have to leave the house to get trained. But boys have to leave the house so that they start doing it themselves. You want to eat, you cook. You don't cook, you don't eat. Simple. Then they start to put together. Okay, then, you know, there's a supplier, and there's, you know, you have to order things, and you have to order it before you cook, not after you cook. And then you have to prepare the stuff. You actually have to cook it, you know, and then there's pots to wash, because if you don't wash them today, you're going to have to wash them tomorrow, unless you eat raw potatoes, and all these things. Then they actually start to see what's going on. Then they become conscious, so they see themselves, the senses, you know, others, religious principles, all these things. Because for the men, they're separate entities. Like that. Intelligence, emotion, and senses are separate entities for men. They can move through them quite quickly, but they're not one entity like a woman. Because technically speaking, mind, intelligence, false ego are one entity, just as three different aspects of the same thing. But for understanding, then we make it into three distinct. So for the women, the intelligence, the senses are all part of the same emotional experience. But men can have a purely intellectual experience, you know, a pure sensual experience, a pure like this. And that's why when they get like that, women can't relate to them. Because then they're acting within themselves rather than reciprocating. Right? If woman's the passive, that means the man has to be the active to bridge the gap. That's what Krishna does. He bridges the gap. Right? He comes home. he interacts with another Yashoda. He goes to the field of the Catholic boys. He goes out with the gopis. Right? He doesn't sit in his house and say the gopis got to come and dance on his roof with him. Right? He goes out. That's the whole thing. That's why everything switches. We have this very clear, it's all just this way, nice, male, male. No, but the thing is at any one point, whatever it is, it keeps switching and it's always opposite. Right? So there's an underlying principle on which it works, it's very logical. But in the art of application, it's unlimited. You know, like I said, like a kaleidoscope, it's only made of a few things in there, but as you turn it, you get unlimited, you know, views. So like that is that it's understood is that that's what's necessary, that it's not the brahmacharis, that's how they're supposed to be. But if their teachers or their leaders are dealing with them, that women are something to be repulsed to, and that's called brahmacharya, then they're not actually brahmacharis. And they'll be, because the bad brahmacharis will be terrible grihasthas. But if they're taught how to deal who they are, then once they understand what man is, then they can only understand what woman is. But if you can't understand what man is, you can't understand women. Women are expanded from men. Krishna's first, then his energy comes. So if you can't understand man, you won't understand. So that's what the brahmacharya focuses on. Then it works. So it's not technically brahmacharya's fault. It will be those who are leading them or training them. Right? Even if that person's a brahmachari, if his leader's still, he doesn't know what he's doing. Because the point is, for brahmacharis, they don't really deal with them. They don't need to. Their environment's complete. They have to learn to be complete, because a man's complete. Right? Then the woman expands. Then he's actually able to deal. If he's complete, he can deal. Right? If you're confident in something, you can deal with anything. Right? Like someone was telling me once that there was this line you have in Kerala, like we do with one elephant. Kerala, they had big festivals. They line up 50 elephants like ours, each with a deity on top. Right? And so, one of the elephants started going crazy. No mahout could take care of it. And this one of the mahout down at the end just walked across the heads of the elephants. Right? You have to know what you're doing to do that. And walked right up to that mad elephant, got it, put it into control, and then everything went on. That's confidence. Right? So if you don't have that confidence, you can't deal. So unless the man has a confidence as a man, he can't deal with the woman. So that's the thing. Women are a threat to them. That's why they act macho and this and that. Because Prabhupada says women are more powerful than men. Says the first page. As far as tattva, men are more there. Because if you get into intelligence and that, and pure intelligence, the men can just cut the women to shreds. Not meaning they're more intelligent. It means it's so devastating to a heart of a woman to be dealt with purely intellectually. That's the meaning of being objectified. You're not a person, you're a category, you're a thing. Right? So it always has to be dealt with. The emotional point has to be there. Right? But in the emotional area, the women can do the same as the men. They can destroy it. So of the two, being emotionally destroyed is actually worse. So men are, therefore, they're more powerful. But for rasa, they interact with women. They have to. That's the only way you're going to get it. Right? It means unless Krishna interacts with his energies, there is no rasa. There's only atmarama. It has a taste. It's happy. But it doesn't have variety. Right? It's very masculine. I exist. Right? With the feminine, then when that element comes in, then there's the exchange. Right? Does that make sense? So the masculine is dependent upon the feminine for rasa. So that puts them in a stronger position. Right? But on the way of tattva, yes, the man is stronger and independent. That's why a woman turns to him. Right? Why would the energy connect itself to something that wasn't its source? The electricity is connected to the generator. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the way it is. So that's where the women connect there. So that's the balance. The woman is more powerful in this way, but her power is fully dependent upon her connection with the man. So the more powerful the woman is, means the better connection with the man is. If her more confidence and more this and that. And if she doesn't have confidence, generally means that she's lacking that male connection. Even if that's Krishna, but whatever it is, she's not making the connection. She doesn't have not making something. So generally it means that, you know, it's not necessarily her fault. The men are supposed to take care of this, right? Men are supposed to protect women. That means they're supposed to see that these are taken care of for them. Is that okay? Yeah? Want to comment? Okay. So I guess we'll end here. Ooh, it's already almost 10 o'clock. Grantaraj Shimad Bhagavatam Ki. Ki.